I hope my battery lasts out. Still in Budapest. I should have been at the farm by now, but just have some last-minute things here to take care of before we go. Today this is the ghosty this evening. I have to meet some people, and Thursday also some more meetings, and Thursday evening I plan to go out to the farm. Nanda Gopadas asks, can you please explain what unchangeable and immovable means in Bhagavad Gita 2:24? Krishna says, unchangeable and immovable. Unchangeable means that you can't change the soul. The soul always remains Satchitananda. And then when Krishna's talking about the soul, then let's not think about our conditioned nature or conditioned soul, but let's think about the actual pure, original, pristine nature of living entity. Soul is always Satchitananda. You don't transform it into something else. You can cover it, or it can cover itself by embracing the material energy. But it always remains the same. It's not like water. For instance, water you can transform into oxygen and hydrogen. You can transform it into two different types of gases. The same is not the case with the soul. The soul will always remain what it is. And as far as immovable, it's an interesting thing because you think, well, how can the soul be immovable? If I'm, you know, moving around in my body, obviously my soul is also moving. However, we should think in terms of different spatial and time dimension when it comes to the soul. We shouldn't think about this matter. It means that the soul is not something that matter can directly influence, can cause either change in, as in the previous thing, or move actually from one place to another. The soul is movable when the soul embraces matter, because matter is movable. But otherwise, the soul is beyond the influence of matter. So when we say that, yes, matter is moving the soul, but in Sukadeva Goswami answers a question of this to Parikshit Maharaj, how can the transcendental soul actually then be influenced by the material energy? So when we're talking about movement, we're talking about material movement. It can't. Material energy can't. But the transcendental living entity has the will to embrace the material energy. And when it embraces the material energy, then it takes on material qualities. And because matter can be moved by matter, therefore it becomes moved from one place to another. Bhakta Vishal from London says, please explain the relationship between Ashtanga Yoga system and the development of mystic powers or cities. There are originally mystic powers in Krishna. All mystic power comes from him. And he is the source of all potencies, different types of potencies. Anima lagima prapti siddhi ashita vashita. And these transcendental potencies are also present within Krishna's own associates to a limited degree. They also have them in their pure form. For conditioned living entities who want to take these mystic cities, yogic cities, with which to lord it over other living entities to become powerful, like a Hiranyakashipu, or to enjoy a sex life like Shobari Muni by expanding himself into many other forms. These are the shadow, these are the abbas of these original mystic cities. And they're available, like everything is available, by tapo, tapo divya putra kadina sattva. So if you perform a suitable type of austerity or tapasya. And generally we see that these types of tapasyas are connected with the Ashtanga yoga system, although maybe not, I don't know. Was Hiranyakashipu standing on the tips of his toes, reaching out to the sky, part of an Ashtanga yoga process? It's not the one that Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita, for sure. Maybe it's some other type of process. It was certainly some kind of authorized process, because the austerity attracted the attention of Lloyd Brahma. And then he had all of the mystic potencies available at his own command in full-blown form, at least as full-blown as they're possible in their material aspect. So, and these mystic powers make themselves available also to Vaishnavas, but even though Vaishnavas may have they certainly don't get attracted to the material aspects of these mystic powers. And when even they possess them in their original form, they still don't utilize them. Prabhupada gives the example of Parikshit Maharaj, who from birth is a great devotee of the Lord, and that he could have neutralized the curse of Sringi, but he didn't. He didn't want to use his mystic powers for that. If it was Krishna's will that the curse take effect, then it let it happen. And if it's not, then Krishna can change it. Devotees practice Atmanivedana, full self-surrender to the Lord. And therefore they sort of avoid using these type of other things, unless, and Srila Prabhupada makes mention, unless it's really necessary for Krishna's service. If you need to employ some type of mystic power, for instance, Arjuna was invoking different type of astras, they're all mystic power. He's using that by mantras, and he's invoking them, so it's also a type of mystic power. But he's doing it, why? Because Krishna told him, now you fight, you use your mystic powers. Dear Bhakta Das, this is very similar to the questions that were also there before. I think it's a copy of them, so I'll go to the next one. There's a whole bunch of questions here from Ashorya Das. How can we distinguish between Nitya Siddha and Sadhana Siddha Jivas? And he wants to know about their potencies and so on. Srila Prabhupada's rule of thumb is that once a sadhaka becomes a siddha, then for all intents and purposes, there's no difference between a nitya siddha and a sadhana siddha. There may be some, and there are, some transcendental distinctions between them, but as far as we conditioned souls are concerned, they're not so relevant. And in terms of this question, how do we distinguish? We can't. We won't be able to distinguish. A siddha may be able to distinguish, but not otherwise. Ordinary living entities can't distinguish. Not only can't they distinguish the difference between a sadhana siddha and a nitya siddha, the problem is often devotees can't even distinguish between a kanishtha madhyam and uttamadhikari. So we need to know how to deal with the different levels of practicing devotees before we want to get into the realm of trying to make distinction between the perfect devotees. Do they have different levels of influence, he asks? Does a nitya siddha have more power than a sadhana siddha? They have potency according to how Krishna empowers them for a particular purpose. Krishna can empower sadhana siddha to manifest more spiritual potency than a nitya siddha. Why not? He can do whatever he likes. It's up to him. Even we see that the perfected devotees in the spiritual world, they also manifest different degrees of perfection. There's lagu, madhyam, uttam. There's perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. So But that doesn't make anyone less perfect. That just gives room for variety. And he said, generally, Prabhupada had said that the previous acharyas are nitya siddhas. Therefore, is it correct to deduce that acharyas are nitya and other siddhas are sadhana siddhas? No. I don't know where Srila Prabhupada said that. It may be that they're nitya siddhas. I'm not arguing that they are anything else, but I haven't heard where he said that. But it's certainly not necessarily a case that an acharya has to be nitya siddha. Our founder acharya of a Brahma Sampradaya is Lord Brahma, and Srila Prabhupada in one walk says that he's not even a pure devotee. He's a great devotee. So what to speak of being a sadhana siddha, he's certainly not a nitya siddha. At least that Brahma that Srila Prabhupada was referring to in that particular instance. All acharyas don't need to be nitya siddhas. On the other hand, I remember what Shakshi Gopal told the two Brahmins who were not acharyas, they were just householders, grihasthas, living in a village. And he told them that you are all my eternal associates. So he identified them as being his eternal associates. And he says, whenever I take birth, you also appear. And they weren't acharyas. So acharya, one can be an acharya and do the service of the acharya. Certainly, as Srila Prabhupada points out, it's best when one is a liberated soul. But even if one's not, and then still one can do that service. And let's all become sadhana siddhas. Let's all become perfect in the execution of devotional service. And that will make our nitya siddha, Srila Prabhupada, very, very happy because all of his hard work and effort will have then been borne fruit. Hare Krishna.